So I am going to start the episode off today by announcing a secret I have. Are you ready for this, Jeffrey?
Ooh, Austin never tells us any secrets.
No, I'm a very secretive person. But I'm willing to share this secret with you guys. All right, so you guys ready for this big secret I've got?
Is this something that you shared with me at any point? Or is this, you know, I'm getting exclusive as well as our listeners right now?
No, you've heard this. You know this fact about me.
Oh, okay. So then I can just, you know, put myself on mute and not listen?
No, it's a statement more than anything.
All right. Why don't you share this secret that you've told me? So I guess it's not really a secret.
I've never told you, but you know. All right. So my big secret is that I love trashy TV. See, Jeffrey, you know that, right? Like trashy reality shows, I love that crap, right? You know that.
Yeah, I mean we've watched a couple together.
We love trash TV. But is there? So you know, there's the reality shows with Amazon and the Leafs. What is it? All or Nothing is called, right?
Yes.
Is there an issue with what they did in the sense that they may have picked the wrong team to do All or Nothing about? Amazon should have done All or Nothing on the Buffalo Sabres. I don't know if you can name it All or Nothing, but that would be the... I would get prime just to watch that.
I think that... Yeah, you know, originally I thought you were going to say the Sens because you seem to always have a hatred towards the Sens. And I mean, that organization probably might be a top five, I think, of teams that you would have wanted to watch what happens on the inside. But I think right now, like within for like this last year, I think Buffalo would be an awesome place. Like a Buffalo would be an awesome team. So, you know, kind of like a Hard Knocks thing, right? Like, you know how Hard Knocks with the NFL? I wonder if they should do like a Hard Knocks with the NHL, and just this year would be great if they did Buffalo.
Because like, okay, so first you've got all the turmoil, but the big news, like, could you imagine getting the inside look on Jack Eichel, the surgery, him losing, hit the C that they announced this week? Like, how insane would that Hard Knocks be, right? Because usually these shows, they grant them like a lot of access, right?
Yeah, like they show you like a whole bunch of things, but obviously, like, you know, it's in the past too, right? So they're not as worried that, you know, things will go out that they don't want to go out.
Well, no, but like they're still pretty like open about it, right? Like even on like All or Nothing, they're like pretty, they're not like hiding everything, just kind of giving like a giant advertisement. Like, don't get me wrong, these shows are an advertising tool, right? Don't get me wrong, I'm fully aware of that, but they still bring the drama, and the Buffalo Sabres would be the best for that.
Do you think maybe the culmination of all this drama was stripping Jack Eichel of the C? Like, I mean, I think we all kind of knew it was coming, but we didn't think, you know, it would be made such a big deal about it.
I don't think that's culmination. The culmination is when he gets traded, right? Because, like, he gets traded. Like, you could say he goes on LTIR, right? And, you know, that gives him the cap relief and everything. But at the end of the day, every day he doesn't get traded, he's a depreciating asset, right?
Yeah, no, I think for sure that the end thing will be that he will get traded. But to me, it just seemed like, I guess when we all thought about, you know, him, you know, getting traded, like we all thought that was going to happen, you know, before the start of season. So like I was kind of blown away the fact that he was going to get stripped of the sea. Like I thought that, you know, he had been traded already, so they wouldn't have to worry about it. But, you know, coming into the new season now, like that's a pretty big move by the Sabres organization. Like they also basically depreciated the asset value of Jack Eichel again by making him, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, he's our captain, so we should want more. Now he's just a $10 million first line center who has a bad neck or spine, and you know, now he's got no value. So honestly, like, can the Sabres even trade him at this point?
I mean, I think he's a depreciated value in the sense that, like, if you're a team that can still fit him into your organization in the sense that you have the assets, you have the cap space. Are you not like kind of just waiting this out even more? Because you're just watching these teams that can actually afford him. There's not that many of them anymore. Like the more that actually like that makes sense, obviously, right? That can afford him and the fit and everything. Like, for example, I'll take LA just because I love LA, right? They were able to afford him. They had the assets to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they bring in a Danoa, and now you don't, there's no need for that, right? Now, if you're a GM, let's say you're of, I don't know, the Sens, right? Like, I don't want to shit on them. I'm not going to shit on them at all. I'm using them as an easy example because they have assets and they technically have cap space. Whether or not, you know, they would do it, it's a different story. But if you're at the Sens, you're like, oh, that's one less suitor that can afford him. Oh, they're not really getting anywhere with this. Why not just wait a couple more weeks? He's gonna be out for basically most for an extended period amount of time anyways if we trade for him. Like if you're Sens, you kind of just go, for example, I'm using Sens again, but hey, he's not playing for the year, right? Then why not just wait a couple more weeks and be like, well, there's another shooter that's leaving. That's another shooter that won't need him. And, you know, bring down the value. You're weighting the value down, right?
Yeah, I think you're basically just trying to wait out the other competition and hoping that they won't find a need for Jack, like to trade for Jack Eichel. So then it gets to the point where you might be the only team that is able to trade for Jack Eichel. And, you know, like I know you mentioned cap space, but I feel like there's always ways to trade money back to Buffalo. So like I'm not too worried about there being like exactly $10 million of cap space available to take on a Jack Eichel's contract. I think there's ways around it. So to me, I think it's a little bit different in terms of like, I think it's definitely going to be based on organizational need, right? Like how you said before with LA, right? I'm sure they could still find a way to like, you know, fit Jack Eichel, but when you have Kopitar and Dano down the middle and you have guys like Byfield, you know, you got to leave, give him some ice time. Like that's where, you know, maybe Jack Eichel doesn't fit. So I think right now you're looking for a team that needs that organization, that meets that organizational fit to take on a Jack Eichel, not necessarily just to cap space.
Yeah, I'd say cap space is probably the easiest part to take care of in the sense that it's, hey, you know what? We can always ship him to another team like in Ottawa who has the cap space to retain, you know, and Ottawa consistently has that internal budget. So for a team looking to acquire Jack Eichel, they can retain for a long time because their long-term planning still would be able to fit that in without any issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a team like Ottawa is always looking for new assets, right? Like draft picks. They're very big on draft picks. So that's a team that would easily fit in, you know, half of Jack Eichel if it needed to, right? It depends on what it is. The question, I think, is that a team that acquires a Jack Eichel is probably trying to contend for playoffs, right? Or the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
How many teams that are contending in the Stanley Cup have the assets that the Sabres want? In the sense that Sabres want impact player picks and young players that are ready to go right now. I think they wanted four in total. How many teams contending for the cup right now are willing to give up an impact player and a young player, sorry to cut you off there, but a young player who can play right now. So it's someone who's probably on a cheaper contract, whether it's a bridge deal or an ELC. Those players are super valuable when you're trying to contend, right? So what team can fit that in with what the Sabres are looking for? I don't think there's that many, to be honest with you.
Well, to be honest, given all that criteria, I want to say zero, right? Like, I honestly don't think there's that many teams out there that have what Buffalo, like there's no perfect trade partner right now for Buffalo and Jack Eichel, right? Like you said, right? What team is going to be willing to trade an impact player to get a Jack, like they're going for the cup, right? So like, why would they trade someone that's going to help them on their team for someone that you're not 100% sure in terms of health, right? So I think that it definitely makes this trade quite difficult. And there's actually one team that I've kind of been like looking at recently and being like, would they not be an interesting fit for Jack Eichel? They've got the picks. They can clear up the cap space easily. The only problem is that maybe they're not ready to contend right away, and it's good. I guess Jack Eichel doesn't have a choice where he goes, but this could be an interesting team, and I think it could be Arizona.
Yeah, I think, okay, so why I said so much about the LA Kings was that you need a team that probably is kind of like bubbling up, like in Arizona. And a team, well, again, why I brought up Kings so much, or they're brought up so much, is that they had so many impact prospects that they're kind of just blocking each other. So a trade like Eichel helps you leave that up. But I want to hear why you think Arizona is a good partner for the Sabres.
Well, I think Arizona, like if you're looking for picks, I think we talked about this before. Arizona has picks up the wazoo this upcoming season and next season, right? Like if you're looking for picks, you're going to find them there. I could see, like, I don't think they're going to trade a Clayton Keller back to Buffalo, but would you not see them at least, you know, giving them more like prospect value and like pick value for a Jack Eichel, and then maybe at least get them a roster player? Like if you're looking to just move cap space, right? I think Buffalo would happily take Louis Erickson as just cap fodder, right? Just for the 1 year, because, you know, just to help with the salaries and stuff. And, you know, Louis Erickson doesn't get paid that much either. So I think Buffalo would take that on easily. Like, I think the one thing that Arizona doesn't have is that they're not a contender, which makes it bad for Eichel. But if you're the Sabres, you don't care. You're going to be able to get good assets back. So, like, I'm imagining somewhere along the lines of, you know, Louis Erickson, a couple of firsts, maybe some seconds, and like maybe a guy like, I don't know, would you throw in a guy like Barrett Hayton? Would you even, are you going to go all in and even go for Victor Soderstrom? Like, I think there's an opportunity for Arizona that maybe they're still trying to tear down a little bit, but I feel like adding a guy like Jack Eichel, if the opportunity presents where you can pay a lower value, I think Arizona would be stupid to not at least entertain that idea.
So our planning did include Arizona, but where is it Arizona right now? I think that's a big question to ask. Like, are they contending? I wouldn't necessarily say that they're a contender at this point, would I? But I also, I think they're kind of like that bubble team that you mentioned, that we mentioned, right? Where it's like you need a team that's kind of like in the middle, where they're like kind of contending, but also not really contending. So I it makes sense to me, but where is Arizona at this point?
I think Arizona is actually a year away from going to rock bottom in their trajectory. So I don't actually, I see them as they're on the downturn. They're not on the upswing like I think you were thinking about as a bubble team. I think, you know, just looking at what they did this offseason, right? You know, trading with Garland and Ekman-Larsson, trading Kemper, you know, taking a lot of, you know, salary dumps. Like, this team to me looks like they're just trying to rebuild and, you know, start over again. So to me, that's why, like, if you even look at the cap friendly, like, how many people do they even have signed past next season? Especially the forward group, right? They have Keller, Schmaltz, and Andrew Ladd after this season. So, to me, I actually think that that's why they're not really a contender. But if you're looking for, you know, I want to start, you know, new again, and obviously very important is having that, you know, number one center. It looks like you already have your number one defenseman in Jacob Chychrun. So, you know, now we just need to add a number one center, and let's see what Jack Eichel can do for us. You know, we're not worried that about this season that, you know, we're not going to be well good. You know, Jack Eichel can take as much time as he needs to rehab after the surgery. We're plenty fine with that. We're okay with tanking and, you know, hoping we're going to get top pick next draft at the next draft. So, you know, if I'm Arizona, I think this wouldn't be a bad risk to take. Like, who knows what Jack Eichel is going to be after your surgery. But like I said, if you can pay a lower than market value price for Jack Eichel, I think Arizona would just snap at this opportunity.
The king of hot takes cannot top that hot take. So we're going to transition to the introduction after that. So let's start the show proper, shall we?
Listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
And we are back. So I gotta ask you, Jeffrey. So we were planning this out. You know, we're doing this over like a voice call or something, right? We were planning out the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about topics we want to talk about, and every year there's, what was it, Fail for Nail? What else were the other ones?
The tank or something? I don't remember.
Yeah, there's basically just a little saying you say for get the first overall pick, right? So you brought up something called fight for right. I gotta ask, did you make that up or did you read that somewhere?
I will be honest, I made this up, but I feel like someone else has already used this before. Like, I feel somewhere near, I'm not that creative a person to come up with something by themselves, but like I'm sure people thought about Lose for Hughes until like it became a thing, but like the fight for right, I think, is probably, it's not creative enough to be something that's original from me, but to me, I never thought about it until, you know, today, as we're, you know, discussing about potential topics, and it kind of ties in, right? Like, we always talk about, you know, oh, which team's gonna win, or we always end up having to talk about the LA Kings, but, you know, we never talk about the teams at the bottom of the table, right? Like, who are the teams this year who are going to be fighting for that number one pick at the draft lottery? And I think we've already mentioned two, right? Buffalo, Arizona, I guess the Sens to a point we talked about very little bit, but like, who are the teams that are really going to be fighting for Shane Wright, basically?
Are you saying that it's a fight for the right for right? I will see myself out.
So, yeah, while Austin sits in a corner, his timeout corner for bad puns and bad takes as well, let's talk about, you know, the fight for right, basically. Like, I think there's basically one team per division that we know is probably going to finish last in the division. Like, the Atlantic, I think Buffalo is in its own league of itself. Like, I know Ottawa and Detroit are bad, but Buffalo is like a whole level, like an entire different level of bad. If you're looking at the Central, you got to feel bad for Arizona, who keep flip-flopping conference divisions. And now they're in the tough Central. And, you know, now that they're out of the cushy Pacific, now they're going to get slammed on. If you look at the Pacific, I mean, yes, it's a very easy division, but the Ducks look like, you know, a team that probably doesn't really fit in. And then if you look at the Metro, where it's always competitive, I guess you kind of look at Columbus and be like, you don't really fit there anymore.
Okay, but I've got a couple questions to ask you, because there's a Jeffrey just dropping the hot take left, right, and center today. I love it. I don't think it's as clear cut as the who is the worst team in the Atlantic. I think the Red Wings are bad. The Sabres are really bad. The Senators are better. But I think the Red Wings and Sabres, it's not as clear cut as you think it is. When it comes to the Metro, the Blue Jackets, yes, there's a chance there's going to be the worst team in the division, but I don't think it's a different level of bad. You know what I mean? If I was tiering the leagues, Columbus is in a way different tier than the Sabres, the Ducks, the Sharks, Coyotes might be in the Senators tier. I don't think it's as clear cut as when you mentioned there's one or two really bad teams in every division.
Well, I would like to point out, can you tell me the goalie tandems for Buffalo and Arizona this upcoming season?
Buffalo, would it be, I don't know, Omark signed with the Bruins. Oh, Aaron Dell. And I'd like to say another like 1B goalie, Craig Anderson. And then on the, who was the other team you mentioned?
Arizona.
Did Aiden Hill sign somewhere? This one is more of a question mark. I don't actually know who the goalies are for the Coyotes. It's kind of one of those things where we mentioned earlier when we're kind of just chatting around, Arizona kind of is one of those teams that you kind of forget who's on it. Who's the goalie tandem for the Arizona Coyotes?
It's Carter Hutton, formerly of the Buffalo Sabres, and Joseph Korner of the San Jose Sharks. And I will tell you this. Thomas Greiss and Alex Nedeljkovic as a goalie tandem for the Red Wings is a lot better than either of those teams can put in the net, right? So I don't think Detroit is actually in that same tier. I think they've stepped it up a little bit. You know, they've made some advances. I think they're on the upswing. But like when you're looking at like the worst team in each division, like I think it's pretty much set in stone. Like Buffalo, okay, maybe Columbus is maybe a little bit out there, but given the fact that they're playing in the tough metro and really maybe like I want to say like New Jersey's on the upswing as well, like to me, like those are like the four teams that look like they're going to be battling for the like they're going to be in the bottom five this season.
But I don't, but at the same time though, lottery. Counterpoint, lottery. And that I think makes it more of a question mark, does it not?
Well, I like in the fight for right, you're looking to get the best lottery chance possible. So I like, you know, yes, there is going to be a lottery, but, you know, you want to give yourself the best opportunity to get Shane Wright. So, to me, I think all four of these teams, too, are looking to, you know, tank quite a bit. Like, I mean, with Buffalo, I think you look at their goalie tandem. You look at the fact that they don't have a number one center. They don't have a number two center. So, they're putting Casey Middlestat as their top line guy. Like, to me, I think you can already see Buffalo is willing to, you know, they've teared it all down. They're ready to accept whatever fate that's going to come to them. You look at Arizona as well. You know, they're basically the same trajectory. They've got all these guys. No one they think is going to be here long term. So, you know, everyone's on a short-term contract. And, you know, I can see them having another fire sale at the trade deadline. And then I guess the Ducks and Columbus are a little bit harder to, you know, kind of look. But remember, Columbus finished below Detroit at the end of the season, right? So, like, I don't think it's too far of a shout to say, like, the Ducks and the Jackets are also part of this group of tanking teams.
I wish Anton was here because Anton's not here today. 24 minutes and Anton said a word. How do I put this? Is there a more screwed team than Columbus? I would argue that San Jose might be up there in the sense that they still think they can win a cup. And in your mind, they're a bottom five team.
Like, in my, yeah, maybe they think that they're a little bit better, but like you look at the Metro, right? Like, maybe New Jersey is like not as good as the other, you know, six teams. You know, maybe the Flyers will, you know, crash and burn. But like to me, Columbus just looks on an island by themselves, right? Like, you know, they thought maybe to make some little additions here, right? Like, you know, moving out Cam Atkinson for Jakub Voracek, but then they lose Seth Jones. I'm still not 100% sure about their goalie tandem of Merzlikins and Korpisalo, but I think losing, you know, that Dubois trade kind of wrecked them quite a bit. Like, Laine and Roslovic have not really done too much, I would say. So, like, to me, this is a team that looks like they feel like they have all these pieces, but doesn't feel like there's any cohesion between any of these pieces. So I feel like they're going to end up having to tear it all down very, very soon. And I think this is the season that's going to really show them that, hey, like, they can't compete. They need to restart.
Okay. Nope. That makes sense. Okay. Call it a useless exercise, but give me your fight for right winner.
I like, are we talking about like they finish last or that nope. They get luck? They win the draft
lottery. Line? They win the lottery.
Would it be stupid to say like New Jersey feels like the new Edmonton of draft lotteries right now? Like, but there's a new rule, didn't we say? Like, there's like a new rule. Like, if you want it within the last certain amount of years, that you can't get the number one pick again or something.
Please stall while I figure this out.
Austin decides to leave. So, I mean, like, to me, like, it's so hard to predict what's actually going to happen in draft lottery. And to me, I think you got to say Buffalo. And I feel like the NHL will try to save Buffalo somehow. Like, they're going to use their dark magic and somehow make Buffalo win the draft lottery, because I think Buffalo just they need something. And you know, it'll be nice, right? Like Shane Wright's from Burlington, Ontario. That's about like an hour drive to Buffalo. Like that's kind of like close enough. Do you feel some connection there? So to me, I'm gonna say Alston, like, once you come back, that the Sabres will win the fight for Wright.
Wow, Jeffrey, that was some great news. So the rule is teams cannot win the lottery more than twice in a 5-year period. However, wins in the lottery prior to 2022 will not be counted toward this total. So in this case, any team can win the right for right. Hell yeah, that was a great pun.
So why don't I go? I feel like, you know, I feel like Buffalo and Arizona need to win one of these. Like, I know Buffalo won the Rasmus Dahlin, but they got shut out from, like, you know, they lost out on the Connor McDavid one. What was the year where they got Sam Reinhart instead? What was, like, Nathan MacKinnon that year? I don't remember, right? Like, Buffalo's got a couple. Buffalo's gotten a couple of seconds, but I feel like it's Arizona's time to finally get a first overall. Okay, I'm going to change my answer. Not Buffalo anymore. I'm going to say Arizona. And then if they get Jack Eichel as well, that'd be awesome.
I don't think in the 128 episodes we've done, we have given this much love to Arizona in an episode before.
I wouldn't say we in this scenario. I would say I have been giving a lot of love to Arizona. You're just, you know, pushing the conversation along. So, you know, I'll give you some credit there.
You prick.
Well, why don't we transition out of that? You know, I feel, you know, we've given a lot of love to these, you know, these teams that are going to be crap. But, you know, let's move on to some happier thoughts, right? Like, you know, the NHL season about to start. I didn't even realize today was the first day of preseason. I was just, you know, flipping through, like, Twitter, and I was like, oh, what? Muzzin scores the first goal of preseason? The preseason started already? So I watched a little bit of that. But, you know, we're getting excited for, like, a lot of players about to play again. And, you know, is there a guy that you're looking at who, you know, you think is going to break out this season?
Are we looking at fantasy-wise?
Whatever you choose. I honestly, I feel like there's a mix between... I feel like there's some... Unless you're looking for like someone who's like fully defensive, like I feel like that it doesn't really matter between fantasy and real life.
Okay, so here's the thing. Jeffrey loves intangibles. I don't know how to value intangibles in terms of valuing them. Some new fantasy. I think Casey Mittelstadt's probably the guy I want to pick early. In the sense that, look, he's going to be 1C. He's going to be playing big power play minutes. And I think the big question mark is, what's the return for Eichel? If, you know, if he comes back to play, then his value obviously goes down. If they do that trade, the value goes down as well. But at the same time, I don't foresee a trade. So I know we mentioned Casey Mittelstadt earlier, and I think he's the one. And I think there also comes some value when teams are looking at where they can slot their backup goalie. I think a lot more of them will think about Buffalo. I know back-to-backs, obviously, but in the world we're in right now where backup goalies are playing a lot more, I think a lot of teams see Buffalo on their schedule and go, that's an opportunity to rest their starter. Because at the end of the day, on offense, there's really not that much going on in the Buffalo Sabres, right? Like, who is actually going to be a high-level scorer on this team? I don't know if I can answer that. Like, if I look at the roster right through it, who do you have? Jeff Skinner? But I don't fully know where he's at right now. Dylan Cousins? I don't think so, realistically. For a guy who had 13 points last season, I don't think he's gonna be, you know, he's gonna fly off the rails. Casey Mittelstadt kind of is going to be that guy to really lead that offense. And I know it's hard because I just said, hey, I don't think a guy who scored, what was it, 16 points can lead an offense, and be like, I think the guy who scored 22 points can run the offense. But I see that progression, and I think that's who I'm gonna choose.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good take. I think, like, I mean, when you look at fantasy and you're looking for, you know, I always find like ice time is often neglected, right? Like just because a guy is, if they get that sudden increase in ice time, like their production's going to get, you know, be a way more. They're going to get more hits, more blocks, more points, more goals, more assists, more penalty minutes, whatever counting stat you're looking at. And even on the bad teams, right? Like as long as you're not too worried about plus minus, like you can get some good value in, you know, guys who are going to be, you know, number one, number two guys. Like that's why you look at a team like Arizona, right? Like, would you not be interested in Nick Schmaltz a little bit more now, like because he's gonna have so much more offensive responsibilities? Like, would you go back and hope that Clayton Keller can turn around after his amazing rookie season? Like, he's gonna get that chance to, you know, really take control of the offense now. But I guess I was looking a little bit more of like, as a player, like in real life, not just at fantasy, like who's going to be the player that's going to really step out or like break out this season. And I don't know why I have a feeling that Nolan Patrick seems to me like a guy who's going to break out. Maybe it's just Vegas, because I feel like anyone who plays for Vegas somehow breaks out, and, you know, happened mainly in their inaugural season. But like, does it not feel like Nolan Patrick is gonna do well in Vegas?
I think there's the question when it comes to Nolan Patrick. It's, he's your classic breakout candidate, young, coming back from injury. The big question I think there is it's his health, right? At the end of the day, I think it's a lot easier to figure out health-wise when it comes to certain body parts, right? You know, your finger, if it's broken, it's broken. You can tell it's broken. ACL, it's torn. You can tell. Comes to your head, it gets kind of a question, right? Where it's just like, you don't know, right? So that's where I'm unsure. So it's definitely if he's completely healthy and ready, then yeah, I think he's going to be a great breakout candidate. The question mark is, there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, I guess it's just like, if when he plays the full season, like what are we going to see from Nolan Patrick, right? Like, we know he has the skill, and like, you know, he lost the full season basically because of, you know, injury, where he, you know, he just needed to take it the year. But like, to me, like, you look at the skill, you know, you look at his underlying stats, like they're not bad. And then when you come into Vegas, where, you know, you're going to be surrounded by really good players, you're going to be put in, like, you know, good situations, like it's hard not to feel that Nolan Patrick, you know, is gonna, you know, have a good season, right? Like last season he had 9 points in 52 games and he was a minus 30. Like, I guess if you're thinking about breakout, like I think he can only go up from there, right? Like there's no way, oh, I don't think there's gonna be any way that he can be do worse than that, those numbers from last season. So to me, like, I feel like Nolan Patrick could be that breakout guy. And like, I wouldn't be surprised, like right now they have Chandler Stephenson centering Pacioretty and Stone. Would you not like to see a guy like Nolan Patrick centering those two guys? And, you know, Nolan Patrick, he's got all these offensive gifts. Maybe defensively he's not that great, but when you get him between like Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty, like Mark Stone's probably one of the best defensive wingers in the NHL right now, and Max Pacioretty is no, you know, defensive liability either. Like, this line could be very dangerous.
I think you nailed the second question mark right on the point. That team is so stacked. What exactly can he provide? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, where is he? Like, he's not going to be, like, I guess even in Philadelphia, it wasn't assumed to be, you know, the number two center right off the bat once he came in, right? But like, he's going to be in such a good situation, right? Like, you've got the Carlson, Smith, and Marshall, so like, they can play the tougher minutes, they can take on the like the defensive matchups. But so like, you can leave him out there facing, you know, third line or third pairing team, like third pairing defensive pairs, and, you know, third or fourth line guys. But, you know, you can even put him with like really good line mates and, you know, see if he can, you know, step up to a challenge. Like, maybe he starts off the season on the third line, but then eventually he moves up the lineup if he plays well. Like, I think Vegas isn't going to need him to do too much. All he needs to do is just enough to, you know, get comfortable, get skating again, and feel like he you know, that change of scenery helps him.
My question mark, I think, let me rephrase that. It's he has to not only play well, guys like Chandler Stephenson have to play bad as well. And that's kind of where I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
I know. Like, okay, what do you see? Where do you see Chandler Stephenson on, like, a regular, like, an average NHL team? Where does Chandler Stephenson slot?
I think, like, a 3C.
So he's a little bit out of place, you would say, then, being between Pacioretty and Stone, right?
Yeah, I think he would.
So that gives me reason to believe that you could, in theory, you know, try out a Nolan Patrick between them, right? Like, there's, I know they, Cody Glass never really worked out in Vegas, and that's why he was kind of moved off. Like, they didn't even trust him in that third, in a third, like a third line center position, even in the playoffs when, you know, they didn't have any centers left. But to me, like, I feel like Nolan Patrick can, he has the skill set that I think that would really elevate their top six. Like, I think he could be a really good addition to Vegas. And, like, he was a sneaky ad, I found that. Because, like, it was all about, you know, the expansion draft, right? Like, when Philly traded him to Nashville, but Nashville didn't want to protect him. So then they traded him to Vegas so they can get Cody Glass, who didn't need to be protected. Like, I think that even though in the swing of things, maybe Nolan Patrick wasn't the end goal for Vegas, I feel like he's what they need to, you know, they were disappointing last season. So I think Nolan Patrick could, you know, give them the spark again. And I think Vegas can give Nolan Patrick that spark to, you know, play well again.
Yeah. Speaking of sparks, though, I think a team we've definitely got to watch for in terms of possible breakout players, Seattle, right? Like,
yeah.
The chance that there's a breakout player coming from Seattle is probably a lot higher than we think, in the sense that a lot of these players selected by Seattle were players that teams did not see the value in the player, right? So they undervalued the player, or they're more likely undervalued players. Sorry. I think Seattle has quite a few candidates I look at, and I have to see, you know what? Deployed in the right situation, which then, you know, results in Dave Haxtell doing these line rushes and everything and line pairings correctly, I think there's a chance you're going to see more likely to see a breakout from a team like Seattle. Am I expecting too much from the Vegas situation, possibly?
No, I think, like, looking at the Vegas situation, I think you have the same, you know, the same reasoning, right, about how Vegas had so many breakouts. So why would we not expect a team like Seattle, who, you know, exact same rules as Vegas at expansion draft, you know, playing in a slightly weaker division again as well. Like, it's a perfect opportunity for Seattle and the players of the Krakens, you know, take on, you know, an elevated role and see what they do with it, right? Like, I think, you know, your big one obviously is probably Vince Dunn, who has always been overshadowed by guys like Pietrangelo and Parayko and Krug and Falks. And, like, now he probably has a chance to lead a number one power play. Like, what can he do with it? And, I mean, the forward group, you don't know who's going to break out, right? Because there's all these guys are probably, like, you know, second, mainly third line, maybe even fourth line guys. And what will they do now that they're, you know, given, you know, 2-3 minutes extra of ice time? Like, what can they do with it? So I agree. Like, I mean, we listed, you know, oh, I completely forgot who you said as your breakout candidate. I feel bad about that.
Casey Middlestad.
Yes, Casey Middlestad. And I mentioned Nolan Patrick. Like, it's going to be someone from Seattle, maybe two from Seattle that are really going to break out. So,
two from Seattle. Okay, so I don't want to put you on the spot, but Vince Dunn, you said, is one. Who would you also consider as a breakout candidate?
I think that's where it gets a little bit sketchy, because you look at this team and I just, there's a lot of guys who already, like, are, you know, I don't want to say in their primes, but they're getting into the late 20s. It's hard to really call them as breakouts. So, like, in terms of young guys, you got, like, Mason Appleton, like, Jared McCann, maybe a guy like Morgan Geeky. But really, all these other guys are, you know, in their late 20s already. So, it's I think it's hard. Maybe I should just say one, and then maybe someone has a career renaissance or something like that. Is that a little bit better of an answer?
Yeah, I think when it comes to breakouts, I don't think age is a matter. And I want to hear your opinion on this too. For my idea of a breakout, it's basically a player who has a season that is beyond their wildest imagination. In the sense that you could be 35 and have a breakout. I still consider that valid. It's just a player that you're not expecting to have that great of a season.
So what would you characterize James Neal's season in Vegas as a breakout?
I would say it's probably not the breakout of the year, but is it a breakout per se? Yes.
Even though two seasons ago before that he had, you know, 14 more points.
Like, it's hard, right? It's a breakout in the sense that he broke out of his expectations, but still it's not his announcement into the league. So maybe my definition was wrong in the sense that it's not like an announcement into the league. You know what I mean? You can be 35, have your announcement to the league, and people, like, teams will start having your scouting report more focused on you now. That's a break. I think that's probably a better definition.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. So if we're going by that definition, which, you know, I feel like a breakout has to be like, you've never done this before. Like, this is a one-time breakout. You can only break out once. Like, Vince Dunn is a very obvious candidate, I think. And, you know, number two, I think it's probably going to be a guy like Mason Appleton. Like, to me, like, when I saw him in Winnipeg, he reminded me of, he was playing like that third fiddle with Lowry and Kopp. But I feel like now that he's not, it's not much of a shadow that he was behind them, but I feel like now that he's given his own role, I feel like he could do more with it. So I feel like with more ice time and, you know, more like more of an offensive push, I feel like Mason Appleton could be that type of guy, like be the type of player that breaks out for Seattle.
Cool. And you're going to hate me for this transition. I know it's supposed to be smooth. We're totally butchering it today. Per like usual. Talking about breakouts, we're talking about breakouts of COVID. How bad was that transition, Jeffrey? I don't even want to know. I got to say, I'm pretty impressed with how the COVID response of the players have been. Because earlier on this month, I think early September, there was an article comparing the NHL with the other major leagues and their vaccination rates, right? So the NHL was actually tied with the MLB at the lowest at about 85%, NBA at about 90, MLS at 95, and the WNBA at 99. So obviously higher than, you know, many major urban populations, which is always great. You always want more of them. The more the better, right? So it's always great news, but at the same time, it's still the lowest of most of the leagues. Don't know exactly how, you know, there's a lot of science behind it, right? So I forgot to mention the NFL 93%. So my point I was going with earlier was that it's the lowest out of the big four, right? So NBA 90, NFL 93, MLB 85, NHL 85. But I've got to say, last couple weeks, they've really pushed it, and, you know, it's an awesome. So I think with Bill Daly mentioning the other day, the NHL will be close to 99%. For their players getting the COVID shot. So that's awesome, right? So I guess the question, I guess, really is you're going to have to ask, I don't know if Jeffrey will be able to answer this, it's what's that motivation? You know, is it the science? Is it the fear of getting sick? Is it how it affects your body? Or is it money? Like, it doesn't matter, to be honest with you. Like, the big thing is they get their shots. But I've got to say, I've been very impressed with the response. Jeffrey?
Do we think that maybe the NHL, we always say hockey seems to be the most team-centered sport. So is that maybe the reason why we see the NHL having such high, you know, maybe the other sports are also, you know, at very high vaccination rates right now as well. But does it not seem like we always, you know, oh, the NHL, they're, no one's ever focused on themselves. They're always focused on the team and, you know, the general population. So maybe that's why they have such a high vaccination rate.
I think that's a very good answer in the sense that I could see many players being like, hey, man, you better get, you know, your vaccination for the team. It's for the team. And if you don't do it, you're not doing your part for the team. You're not being a good team player, which, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like is the worst thing you could say to a hockey player. Calling them not being one of the boys is, I think, one of the worst things, if not the worst thing you could say to a player.
Maybe. But, like, maybe people are going to disagree with me on this, and I feel like a lot of people do. But is it bad that certain players are being pointed out as not being vaccinated?
Okay, so before we continue, I think it's important to say that at the Bag of Pucks podcast, our stance has remained steadfast, and we're pro-vaccine. Just so we're out there, you know. I think if you listen to our podcast regularly enough, you can kind of tell we're pro-vaccine when we're like, get your shots, people. So we're pro-vaccine. So, you know, before I get like, you know, whatever thoughts are, yes, we're biased. We don't care. We're going to remain biased. I think when it comes down to it, of all the players that have been publicly named, who's a player that's been publicly named that didn't kind of publicly name themselves? Who got shouted out that they didn't get the vaccine, that they didn't really want to get shouted out?
Was Bertuzzi like kind of caught in the, like, did he get named out like out of the blue? Almost, not out of blue maybe, but like, I feel like the one name that we've heard the most, but that was from the player himself, was Bode Weil of the Islanders. But I feel like Tyler Bertuzzi hasn't really made a public statement saying he's not getting vaccinated. And that guy's kind of came out from Steve Yzerman being like, oh no, Bertuzzi has not been vaccinated and is not, you know, coming to training camp. Like, that's the one case I can think of where, you know, it wasn't the player that came out, but it was the team.
Okay, but in my mind, I think that's still the same, because I feel like the team saying it on behalf of the player is more or less the same. It's what my question was, like, who's a player that got shouted out by the fans? Because I feel like if you're, when a team says it, the team probably goes to the player and goes like, hey, we're going to say it because we need to explain your absence. Right? It's not like a fan being like, I searched the records and, you know, that's a different story. I don't think there's a player where it's led by the fans and not from a team or a player, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. But like, I can see it slowly happening where, like, I honestly don't think, like, unless a player explicitly announces it themselves that they're not getting vaccinated, I don't think it should be the team's job to say it, right? Like, it's an invasion of personal privacy, in my opinion. Like, I guess this is where we probably disagree, right? But, like, if a player chooses not to get vaccinated, then I think that it's up to the player to announce it and not the team.
Okay, so I guess you get there. I guess we're getting into what-if-ism, and I know you hate it, but I'm just going to ignore that, and regardless, I still do it. What if the player refuses to announce it? Or maybe there already is a player that right now refuses to announce it. How, as a team, do you explain why they're constantly unavailable in cross-country games, like different country games?
Can't you just put them on like a COVID restriction list? Like, you know how, like, players who, you know, we never actually said if a player, you know, tested positive for COVID, but like, if they were in close contact, they'd be put on the COVID restriction list. Like, I think that you could probably do something like that, because it's technically, like, you know, your personal health information. You should be like, that shouldn't be public knowledge if a player chooses not to make that public knowledge. So I feel like there could have been a way around this, because now I feel like, you know, the players are going to be singled out, like, especially if they're prominent players, right? Like, isn't there like some stat, like, Tyler Bertuzzi is like barely owned right now in fantasy because he isn't vaccinated? Like, even though he's only probably gonna be missing games in Canada. Like, he's being less picked in fantasy drafts apparently as well. Like, I like, that's not like anything. I don't think Tyler Bertuzzi cares that he's not being picked in fantasy drafts. But like, to me, there is a little bit of invasion of privacy, I feel like, with teams announcing that, you know, a certain player isn't going to be playing because they're not vaccinated. I feel like they could have been like, you know, we're at a 90-something percent vaccination rate as an organization and just leave it at that. Like, that could be player, that could be hockey op personnel, like, that could be other staff. Like, I feel like there might have been a way to be a little bit more, you know, I don't know what the word would be, but like, try to be a little bit more, not peaceful, but a little bit more
diplomatic,
professional. Pardon?
Okay. I was going to say diplomatic, but professional is probably the right one to use.
Yeah, diplomatic and professional, I think, yeah. Interchangeably, that could work.
So I guess in a way, would you have preferred that people had found out kind of on their own when it was like player A, who plays in the American team, every time they play in Canada is in the COVID restriction list, and then when they come back, immediately gets taken off. Would you have preferred that kind of just like eventually just figured it out? Because that's eventually what happened, right? Realistically, right? Every single Canadian time they play, he doesn't play? Huh. Why? You know what I mean? Eventually someone would figure it out.
Yeah, like I agree with that. And like, it's probably be up to the player, I think, would be best case scenario to, you know, say that they haven't chosen to get vaccinated. But maybe it also wouldn't be that obvious either. Like, especially if it's an American player on an American team, like, you have literally like two road trips, like one to the west, one to the east, maybe the odd one in Winnipeg. Like, you could probably sneak around that, as you know, it's just two times or three times going on the COVID restriction list. But I think it'll be up to the player once, if they feel comfortable, you know, publicly announcing it. I just feel like it was kind of weird for Detroit. I really hope that, you know, the Detroit organization had asked Bertuzzi's consent to say that he was the one person who didn't get vaccinated, because if it wasn't the case, then I would feel awful. Like, I feel like that's invasion of, you know, your own choice. So, you know, we're pro vaccine here, but like, for the people who do choose not to get vaccination, like, I guess I empathize with them. Like, if they've chosen, and maybe there is a like a legitimate reason why Bertuzzi is not getting vaccinated, and it's not that he doesn't want to protect others, but maybe there's a significant reason why he chooses not to. Like, he hasn't released a reason why, but I feel like this suddenly puts a target on his back as, you know, a prominent name who's chosen not to get vaccinated.
You know what I gotta say, Jeffrey, we did take, you know, a more controversial topic, probably one of the most controversial topics we've had in a while, and I think we very maturely digested that. I'm proud of us.
We were both professional and diplomatic, like you said.
Oh, is this the title of our episode or what?
Well, I wanted to call it for Fight for Right, but...
We'll do Fight for Right.
We'll debate about it later. You know, well, I have final control over titles, as Anton found out the other day. And I posted them out. So, I mean, but I am very professional and diplomatic, and I will allow my co-hosts to have their input in what they would like the title of the episode to be.
So you're saying it's a democracy, not a dictatorship?
I never said it was democracy. I said I would listen to input. A dictator can still listen to input from others, but I mean, it's not a... For certain areas of this podcast, we have diplomacy, we have some democracy, and sometimes we have totalitarianism.
All right, with that being said, I think that's a good place to end this podcast. Do you have final thoughts, Jeffrey?
I think that my final thoughts is that, you know, there's a lot of controversial things in the world right now. You know, there are things that, you know, come up in every day that, you know, we don't always agree on with other people. But I think it's always important to have, you know, professional and diplomatic conversations with each other. You know, listen to each other's perspective. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're trying to change someone's perspective, but all you can do is offer another view of a certain, you know, topic. And I think that we can always grow from having more conversations about these topics, right? Maybe you might be debating whether Buffalo or Arizona is going to be the worst team, but you're not trying to change your mind. You're there to, you know, provide your insight, your point of view. And it's always going to be up to that other person in your conversation, whether they feel like they will, you know, take in your point of view and change your own perspective, or whether they don't find that your point of view is helpful at all and that they're going to stick to their own point of view. So that's my final thought for this episode.
I can't tell if that was a slight at me for anything, but I'm going to pretend it's not. So my final thoughts, again, because, you know, we're pro-vaccine. Get your damn shots, people. I want to be able to do the wave and wear my LA Kings jersey at a Leafs game and get booed. So please get your shots, people. Besides that, wash your fucking hands, guys. The amount of times that we touch our face in a day is disgusting. So, yeah, wash your hands. And I'm not here next week, so my streak ends. But we'll still have an episode. So I'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Love y'all. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks Podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.